Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com. Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jack Rico, and welcome to episode 145 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. My guest today...
Culture doesn't necessarily need to come from an Anglo country. I think the pop culture is going to come from either Mexico or Ghana or Korea, and that makes me really happy.
That's Camilo Lara, the brainchild behind one of the most innovative musical band in decades, Mexican Institute of Sound. We discuss the meaning behind his new single, My America Is Not Your America, why racism exists in Mexico, how he collaborated with Pixar's Oscar-winning film Coco, and how he believes that pop culture will no longer come from America, but from other cultures of the world. It's a candid and memorable conversation you won't want to miss. But before we get started, it's time I give you my weekly review of what's happening in Latinx pop culture in a segment I like to call Jacked In. Let's begin with the top movie, TV, and music news of the week. Guatemalan actor Oscar Isaac will star in the movie adaptation of the video game Metal Gear Solid. Diego Luna will reprise his Rogue One role as Cassian Andor in the prequel series. Bad Bunny's new album, El Último Tour del Mundo, has made history as the first Spanish-language album to ever debut number one on the Billboard 200. Netflix's Selena, the series, is the number one streaming show on Netflix. Country pop star Carrie Underwood and David Bisbal collaborate on Tears of Gold. NBC is developing a female Zorro drama from Robert Rodriguez and Sofia Vergara. And the Latinx reboot of One Day at a Time has officially been canceled. And in tech and social media news, Reddit buys Dubsmash, known to be the TikTok for Black and Latinx people. Facebook is being sued to sell off Instagram and WhatsApp. Disney Plus grows to 86.8 million U.S. subscribers. Apple has released Apple AirPods Max headphones for $549. The highly anticipated video game Cyberpunk 2077 with Keanu Reeves is out now. You can now add tweets to your Snapchat, and the meditation app Headspace has a new meditation show on Netflix. Camilo Lara is the brainchild of Mexican Institute of Sound, who have a new album called Distrito Federal, releasing January 2021 with collaborations with Gorillaz and Blur, just to name a few. David Gilmour of Pink Floyd called Distrito Federal his favorite album of the year. Amongst his many achievements, Camilo was the musical consultant of Pixar's Oscar-winning Coco, one of my favorite films, Camilo. We'll talk about that in just a few. And he's done music for the upcoming season 3 of Narcos Mexico. Big deal with that. His work has also been featured on Breaking Bad, Y Tu Mamá También, another great movie of mine, Californication, and Ugly Betty. Camilo, welcome to the Highly Relevant Podcast.
Hi, Jack. Great to be here. So happy
Dude,
to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you, my man.
likewise.
So I understand that the new album, Distrito Federal, is a love letter to Ciudad Mexico. And the first thing I'm thinking, okay, you're Mexican. Why wasn't this your first album right off the bat?
Right. Well, funny enough, most of all my music revolves around where I like my city and my culture. I mean, my band is called Mexican Institute of Sound, so I'm pretty much in love with my surroundings, and that's I've been in all the records and projects I have done. There's always a kind of a roots kind of thing around Mexico and my mm-hmm. culture. So I think. On this record, I've been kind of thinking a lot about the city that is no longer called Distrito Federal. They changed the name of the city a few years ago, so it's suddenly the city that you've grown up is not longer the city that you fall in love with. The green taxis, the Los Bochos, the Beatles are no longer, you don't see that anymore. Instead of small cafes, there are Oxxos and 7-Elevens. And so it suddenly the city changed. And this is a kind of a record that kind of explore the romantic side of the Mexico City that I like when I was growing up and using public transportation and record digging and all that stuff.
One of the tracks in the album is called My America Is Not Your America. It's featuring Graham Coxon from Blur. And it was interesting to me because it reminded me immediately of Childish Gambino's This Is Not America, or This Is America, right? And I kind of wanted to understand from your perspective why you decided to title this song like that. Why did you want to create a song like that? What is your relationship with America? And what are you trying to say from social commentary through this song about America and why your America, which is Mexico America, probably is, you know, historically, but it's not your America. So which America do you know that we don't?
Yes, I think that the main idea was that for me, America was the Mapuches in Chile, the Tarahumaras in the northern part of Mexico, the Canadians, like all sort of different people and colors and ideology. And when it comes to America, it seems I was like very sad and like hear about Trump's wall. So I thought like that America is not open the arms for Americans, and that's crazy. Like and they're treating really bad our Mexican people that is trying to go to America and try to work in America. So it was a double meaning thing. Like from one side, like America is everything. It's and America is a thought. You know, like I think America as a thought should be an inclusion thing, and seems like it was heading the wrong way. Like America was for a few instead for all, and that was my main thing. So it has two kind of readings, I guess.
So in 1829, Mexico abolished slavery. America didn't do it for another 30 years in 1865. And in your video, you have some black people, you know, and it kind of led me to this whole thing. When you study the history of Mexico, at least modern Mexico, you start thinking of Gaspar Yanga. You start thinking about the Afro-Mexicans that live in Mexico that deny their race. We've seen too many documentaries of Mexicans saying that they're not black, that they have no type of black in them whatsoever. Yet there's so many blacks that go to Mexico. There's so many Mexicans that are black. Can you explain a little bit about your relationship with racism in Mexico and also racism in America as well, and how you live interweaved in all of that?
Oh my God! Like I think we have endemic racism and it's combined with classism, and I think
why is that? Why is that, Camilo? Why is there such racism in Mexico when you guys are better, supposedly better than America, right? Than North America, than the United States?
Well, yeah, but I don't think we're better, but I think we're just it's a society that out of 150 million, probably 45 million people lives in poverty. So half of that, like, let's say 50 million lives in poverty and 100 million are middle classers. And only like a very tiny piece of that pie is rich people. So the class, the fight of classes is, it's huge. And the racism is systematic because you can be judged for the car you have or the work you do, or, and that has been since the Aztecs, probably. Like, we had that system that is it's very hard and it's terrible. And I think that has been one of the biggest problems as a country. Like, we haven't embraced and support our poor people to leave poverty and become middle classers. So it's a huge deal, and it's a mindset. We have a lot to work about it.
So I'm looking at the back. We're doing the Zoom call right now, and I'm looking at the background of your video, man. And there is one of the biggest massive walls of CDs I have ever seen in my life. It's almost like our records or Virgin Records back in the day. Can you talk to me a little bit about this collection that you have here and your musical influences that have created Mexican Institute of Sound?
Yes. I used to have a massive collection. This, what you see, is nothing.
Wow.
I used to have probably 45,000 vinyls and 50,000 CDs. Recently, I gave it away to a place where it can handle it, and it can and it's a public library, so people can go and use it. But I kept a few, and this is the one you're seeing, and I have a few vinyls still. But I'm a record collector, so that's what I do. I love record digging, sampling. My first instrument was sampler, so the albums were where I found the sounds to do music. So I used to spend all time record digging and finding music.
Can you talk to me about your musical sound? Because when I listen to Mexican Institute of Sound, I'm trying to nail down what genre this is, man. And I'm having problem describing it to my friends that might not have heard your music, my black friends, my white friends, my all types of friends. And some of them are like, yeah, this is really different than everything else I've seen. And then some people really dig it. Can you explain to me what this cocktail of sounds to create MIS, Mexican Institute of Sound, is exactly?
Well, when I was growing up, I had two different kind of music going on in my life. Being a middle classer in Mexico City and having two brothers that were kind of new wavers, they were listening to The Cure and Bauhaus and all these kind of bands from the UK that were kind of cool and goth. But when I leave my house, right outside, there were always cumbia sounding, and cumbia and so on, mambo. So when I was growing up, I started record digging and using sampler as an instrument. And instead of sampling whatever everyone samplers, I started record digging for mambo, danzón, cha-cha-cha, cumbia, and start using those sounds. So in my head, I wanted to sound like The Clash or Kraftwerk or electronic music or hip-hop, but it ended up sounding like Mexican music. So at the beginning, it was kind of a experiment that. And I started embracing it, and I thought, I love the way the trumpet sounds, and I love the beat. So I started doing that, and then I realized I had two passions, Mexican music and Latino music, and I love punk rock, I love hip-hop, I love electronica. So I kind of been flirting with all those genres, but my music it comes from the sound of Latin America, like Cuba, Mexico. And basically, later in my life, I discovered cumbia was my jam. It was the rhythm that it was easy to dance, and it was easy to play, like punk rock, that you don't need to be like super virtuoso to play it. And I'm not a virtuoso, but I like the simplicity of it. So cumbia for me was perfect. And then I realized cumbia There was cumbia everywhere in Latin America.
Oh, yeah, Colombia. Es uno de esos.
Colombia is like the Nashville of cumbia. So, but you had cumbia from Canada to Argentina. Wow. And they kind of make it their own way. So cumbia, in a way, is a hip-hop of Latin America. It's a rhythm that goes across the Latino diaspora, and it's fantastic, and it's simple, and it's just it's a basic rhythm. It's so old that it's perfect. I love it. It's as strong as reggae or these very powerful rhythms.
I had been to Ciudad Mexico for, you know, like maybe a half a dozen times. And one of the fascinations that I have is that there's an extremely dependence on American culture in Mexico. There's been this cacophony of Mexicans not wanting to be dependent on American culture. You seem to be very into hanging out with U.S. artists and U.S. music and U.S. culture. Do you grapple with that? Are you okay loving America from the entertainment perspective, the music, the history of it? Or do you want to just get rid of that and become your own Mexican person with your own Mexican identity? Just have a global cocktail of things, but, you know, Mexican.
Well, I mean, the U.S. is the big brother always and always be. I grow up with American culture, and it is impossible not to grow up with that in Mexico. And later in life, I discovered like a city like L.A., for example, had so many things of what I am that later in life I start gravitating between Mexico City and Los Angeles. So I feel I belong to those two places. I spend a lot of time in both cities. And I always loved American culture and love pop culture in general. What I do think is very interesting in this time is that culture doesn't necessarily need to come from an Anglo country, meaning the UK or the US. I think the pop culture is gonna come from either Mexico or Ghana or Korea, and that makes me really happy. It's not that I don't love American or UK music, but I do think the world deserves to have more diversity, and that's fantastic. But definitely my pop culture, I mean, I'm a pop culture addict, and I love whatever pop culture can give me, no?
Talk to me about Coco. This is one of my favorite movies. Tell me how you got close to this movie that won the Oscar and that represented Mexico in a way that America had never really truly done before.
It was completely random. I got a message on Facebook saying like, "Hey, I'm Lee, I direct Toy Story and Monsters, Inc. Sounds like a joke, but I'm real. And I'm listening to your music and I love it and I would love to have you on my film." So that was my first approach to that. And
wow.
Realizing it was not a joke, I took a few meetings in on Pixar, and I discovered Lee was actually a big fan of my music, and he wrote the beginning of the script listening to my music. So he invited me to join the project, and the very first thing we had a conversation about was that in my mind all the animated films that show Mexicans were little mice with big hats that sleep outside a bullfight plaza and took naps. And I was like, that's not the idea I want to, if that this project is that, I don't want to be involved. I would love if I think Mexico deserves more than that portrait on an animated film. And later I started discovering it was actually a beautiful kind of a homage to Mexican culture. And so I got involved. I started helping with all the recordings. I had a few songs on the movie, and it was beautiful. I remember the last day we were recording in Mexico City with all the team. Trump won the election.
That's right.
The very same day, and it was at that moment I had a conversation with Lee, and I told him like, your movie is becoming a political weapon because it's very brave to make a film in the new Trump era talking about how amazing is Mexico while he's saying the opposite, you know? So I think it was brave, and it was amazing to have that. And at the same time in Mexico, there was like the horror wave of narco violence. So for me to have that kind of a beautiful, amazing movie to show how beautiful is my culture, it was very important. The only way to fight violence and hate is to show something super positive. And this was the perfect way to put a daisy flower in a cannon, you know? It was a beautiful way to fight something horrible that was happening to Mexico. I always told everyone at the Pixar, like, what is worse to have Trump in power? I was saying, being a Mexican, having Trump in power, that's even worse. Like, so it was very brave, and I really, I feel very lucky to be part of that amazing project.
You mentioned Narco not too long ago. I know that you are composing or doing music for Narcos Mexico season 3. That to me is pretty huge because you had Diego Luna as a part of it, and it's become a big hit here in the United States. Tell me about how that happened and what exactly are you doing with Narcos? Is it just music?
Yes, I've been working on all the Mexico season, seasons, and I do all the incidental music. I've been working with Liza Richardson, which is the musical supervisor, for a long time. She was my partner in crime with Y Tu Mamá También a long time ago.
Wow, how cool.
So having this project together is fantastic, and I love Narcos. Like, it's such a great TV show.
It is. It's very entertaining. Finally, just before we get out of here, Camilo, I wanted to talk about your favorite songs on the new album, Distrito Federal. What are some of the tracks that you want people to know more deeply that you can explain about where those songs come from that are very personal and connecting to you?
This whole album has... each song is an idea of whatever I think it's happening in Mexico, or things that I remember, or things that I love, or things that I hate. But the track that opened the album is called Se Compran. And if you live in Mexico City, there's no way you haven't listened to the guy who buys stuff. So there's everywhere in the city, there's a band with loudspeakers saying, se compran colchones, tambores, refrigeradores, lavadoras, microondas, y fierro viejo, calenda. So it's like a mantra. You keep hearing that over and over and over, and it's annoying. Like, but it's part of the landscape of the city. So I thought, like, if you take out the sound of that and you say it as poetry, it's almost concrete poetry. It's something beautiful. So I made a song about that treats that famous se compran tambores, colchones, lavadoras, microondas as poetry. What happened if someone would say a poem out of that? And it's a mantra. And I think it's beautiful. It's a mantra of Mexico City. That is one. The second one, it's a song called Dios, that it's a crossroads, that what would happen if you run into God and the devil.
Si me encontrara a Dios, le pediré unas quesadillas. Si me encontrara a Dios, le pediré unas quesadillas. Si me encontrara al chamuco, le pediría chicharrón. Si me encontrara al chamuco, le pediría chicharrón.
I say, like, if I run into God, I would ask him for a quesadilla. And if I run into the devil, I would ask him a gordita. But my end of the tale is that no matter what you take, what road you take, it's the same. Like you, it's the same road at the end of the road. Because a gordita and a quesadilla are made of the same material, and basically it's the same. And the song is called Dios because I think that's where you can find Dios, God. I think Mexicans are made of blood, water, and maize and corn. If you smash a Mexican, you have a quesadilla or a gordita.
That's an interesting perspective. That's actually really good. Bueno, Camilo, muchísimas gracias por estar aquí con nosotros en the Highly Relevant Podcast. I much appreciated. The name of the album is called Distrito Federal. It comes out January 2021. Camilo, once again, thank you for being on the show.
Muchas gracias, Jack.
And before I wrap up here, are three Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend.
Ahí viene la liebre, le manto su diente. Está el caliente y humilde comenzó.
La fiebre busca bulla.
Cogiste la fiebre que te tienes de mente. Están todos pendientes al nuevo campeón.
Pronto, clubs.
Soy rara, te lo acepto, estoy loca. Tengo mis defectos, perdida, corro de abajo arriba. Aún no
quema,
sé
picar Sotomayor. Vida.
Lento, voy retrocediendo y cuento el tiempo que no vi siendo un ciego. Por un segundo mis piernas reclaman el suelo que quema.
And that's it for episode 145 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. I'd like to thank Camilo Lara for coming on the show. And if you'd like to see the video version of this interview, you can catch it over at my YouTube channel, at Jack Rico. Please subscribe if you feel value in what we do and leave a review on our iTunes page. Also, we have a new podcast about race and pop culture called Brown and Black with Mike Sargent and me. It's available on all podcast platforms. I'm Jack Rico. See you next time on another episode of Highly Relevant.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com. Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.